Hi, everybody. It's Jim Beekai, and the podcast is Be You, The World Will Adjust. I'm sitting in Toronto, a beautiful day, looking out from my condo. It's pretty spectacular as I look down. The traffic's still not back to what we've normally seen. I hope everybody's having a good summer so far. I know in talking to people, most people are just getting ready now. You know, people tend to take the last 2 weeks of July or the first 2 weeks of August as their vacation. So I hope you get some time with your loved ones to reconnect and everything else. I want to talk about vaccinations. The lines are getting drawn between the vaccinators and the anti-vaxxer. I just want to add my voice to encourage people to get vaccinated, not just for yourself, but for those around you and your loved ones and your friends. I have this real sense and seeing it, you know, I was listening yesterday to CNN and they had de Blasio, mayor of New York, on television. It was absolutely stunning to me that the statistics that he put out, he said that in New York City, only 70% of the healthcare workers are vaccinated. And I thought, how is that possible? These people are working in hospitals and everything else. How could that not be 100%? And then he said that only 50% of the people in the United States in the healthcare industry are vaccinated. So that means if you're in New York City, you got a 1 in 3 chance that you could be attended to by someone who is not vaccinated. On the broader scale, you know, a 50% chance. This tug of war that's going on between people wondering whether you can mandate vaccinations. Yeah, you can mandate vaccinations. That's why we don't have polio. That's why we don't have smallpox. That's why kids can safely go to school. How is this any different than those situations? It's not different at all. In fact, it's probably even more critical, given that with this new strain of variant, the numbers are starting to go back up. People are starting to die again. So, and I, you know, I had someone say to me the other day, well, you know, you're infringing upon my civil liberties by, you know, forcing me to get vaccinated. And I was like, well, what about my civil liberties that I don't want to be in a space with people that haven't been vaccinated? And I don't care if I have to wear a mask for the next 2 to 3 years indoors. That's fine. Vaccinated or not vaccinated. All of the other conversations are irrelevant. If you're not vaccinated, get vaccinated. You're going to be in a minority, and organizations and corporations and people are going to annex you away from them. Because what's going to happen is the majority of the population is going to get vaccinated and they're going to rule. And they're going to say, we don't want to work. We don't want to go to school. We don't want to go to the gym. We don't want to go on vacation. We don't want to do any of those things with people that are not vaccinated. It's not about the people. It's not about anything else. It's about the vaccination. So do it, like they say at Nike. The other thing that happened this week that was kind of interesting, and I'm always fascinated by how things come to me. It's like when I say to people when I coach them, I say, what brought you to me? What was the event that brought us together serendipitously or however it was? And usually it's a low point in someone's career or looking for another job, confusion. Oftentimes people say to me, I'm kind of lost. I'm not really sure what I'm looking for. And I find the same thing happens for me as it relates to the podcast. I can't say that it happens all the time. Sometimes I struggle with what to talk about, but this week was kind of interesting. I had a couple of people, actually 3 people that I've been working with, and all 3 of them got relatively new jobs. And they all realized when they got a new job that it wasn't as advertised, that they were sold on one thing. And when they actually got into the job, it was not marginally different, significantly different by, you know, like 180 degrees in some case. And I was sort of reminded of when I took my job at Nesbitt after I'd been fired from CIBC. And, you know, I'd offered the job as the head of fixed income, and in it, and I turned that down. And then they really wanted me to do that job. So they just kept piling stuff on. Well, you could also do this. And then you could also do this, and sort of making it more attractive, not in monetary terms, but in responsibility terms. And they kept piling it up, and they kept piling it up, and kept piling it up, until they finally got me to say, yeah, that portfolio of things looks really good. But when I got there, the only thing they really wanted me to do was run fixed income. And I realized that within a week there. And I made the mistake because I didn't have the intestinal fortitude to sort of go forward. I had just been fired from one job, but I didn't have the intestinal fortitude to go forward and say, hey, just hang on a second. This is not what we agreed to. This isn't the job that I agreed to take. And instead, I did the classic, which, by the way, all three of the people that I'm coaching this week have done as well, which is to say to themselves, well, you know, I'll give it a little time. Like, I'll see if it works. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm just not reading the situation correctly. And so let me tell you, it's not you. If you feel that way, there's a reason you feel that way. You're not misunderstanding the situation, and you need to do something about it. And as I said to one of the people that I coached, I said, you just need to sort of politely sit down and sort of hold up the job description of what the job was, and then hold up the description of what you're doing on a daily basis, and say to these people, these two things don't match. You know, I know my critics will now sort of step in and sort of say, well, yeah, that's really great for you. You know, you got a job, you've got everything else. But, you know, people that are working can't afford to do that. And my response to them is, no, so they should continue on and be unhappy in what they're doing versus looking for something that does match what they're doing. Looking to work for someone who says, I need you to stack these dishes every day. That's what they tell you they need you to do. They don't need to tell you that you're going to be a gourmet chef, and then you get in there and you find out that all you're doing is stacking dishes for the gourmet chef, and, you know, kind of left that part out in the middle. And I don't just see it in new jobs, but I see it in organizations. And, you know, as I've said before, you know, everybody is responsible for themselves. Organizations need you to do what they want you to do. And if you don't stop, and if you don't push back, then it's your fault and you're responsible as much as they are. Probably the one thing that makes me concerned the most is I can't get to enough people to tell them to stop being afraid. And I fundamentally understand that fear. I understand that fear of conflict. I understand that sort of like, well, if I say something, will I lose my job? By just saying, look, this is what the job was, this is what the job is, you're not going to get fired. And if you do get fired, you sue them. Because all you're doing is asking for what your job is supposed to be. But it gives you the answer, right? And, you know, one of the people that I was talking to has just been in the job for less than a week, and they already don't want to go to work. Who needs to start a job with that kind of stress? So I guess in terms of what to do with that is when you're interviewing, you got to really drill down. Don't listen to what you want to hear. Make sure you ask the questions to get the answers that you may not want to hear, but you need to hear, right? You need to know the truth. As we say, the truth will set you free. It'll save you from making horrendous mistakes that imprint on your career. Like if I had walked out of Nesbitt a week to 2 weeks afterwards, I would have managed the dialogue. And the dialogue would have been, Jim went in there, it's not what they portrayed it to be, and so he pulled the plug. But I didn't. Tried to make it work, tried to get along, tried to do all these things. So in 2 years, when Jim gets fired again, Jim no longer controls the dialogue. Why am I talking about myself in third person? Anyways, I no longer controlled the dialogue. And then the dialogue became, Jim must suck at what he does because he's been fired by two Canadian banks in 2 years. And there was that moment of turning point. And I didn't have the intestinal fortitude. And I didn't have a gym to kick my ass. I had everybody else going, maybe you're misreading it. You know, maybe, you know, why don't you just give it a little more time? The guy that hired me was a bold-faced liar. He needed me to do what he needed me to do. And that was all that mattered. Everything else was horseshit. We have to protect ourselves from those people, especially the good people. Because the not so good people never get themselves into those positions because they drive hard. They're pure selfish. They ask every question. And if it's not perfect for them and if they haven't ground you, they're not going to take the job. So for all of you people, all of you believing people, all of you people that want to believe the good, you have to do your due diligence. You have to make sure that you actually understand what it is you're being hired for, what your responsibilities are, what your authority is, and what your accountability is. I find far too many people gloss over. You need to have multiple interviews with the people, and you need to control the dialogue. You need to ask the questions. What kind of people do you have there? Do you understand my skills completely? How would you see the organization utilizing my skills best? And if they don't have the answers, or if they're not the answers that fit for you, then you have to walk. And I have to help people break this idea that any job is better than no job. And I'd rather you drive Uber than take the wrong job. I'd rather you pack groceries at Loblaws than take the wrong career job. Coach a guy, I think I may have told the story, you had 10 jobs in 10 years. 1 year jobs. And I said to him, do you notice anything consistent about your CV? And he said, yeah, every single person I worked for was an asshole. And I said, wow. I said, that's amazing. I said, that kind of record. I said, do you realize it's just as hard to pick 10 great people in a row to work for as it is to pick 10 assholes to work for? Completely unreflecting of the fact that he picked these people to work for. I played golf a couple of weeks ago with someone, and last three or four jobs he talked about, you know, he was talking about the people he worked for. The reason he left was because they were micromanagers. And yet when I sort of said to him, so you did that the first time, you did that the second time, you did that the third time, and now you're in your fourth micromanager with that doesn't trust people. Do you think that maybe it's time to reflect on why am I picking these people? It's like, you know, all the books written on why we pick the wrong mate, why people that are divorced pick someone so similar to the other thing. I believe it's because we don't know ourselves and we're afraid to be ourselves. We're afraid to be honest because fundamentally we're afraid of rejection. We're afraid of the word no, but we shouldn't be. Because sometimes the word no is the best route for us. It saves us. It stops us from overruling our brain and our gut and our emotions that are telling us something. We're built to feel, sense, process. And yet, how many times do we overrule ourselves? How many times do we think someone knows better than we do? I was having a conversation with someone this morning, and we were talking about Colin Morikawa, who just won the British Open. And I was talking to my client about the interview he gave after the PGA. And the reporter said to him, you know, you were standing on the 16th tee box. Did you get a chance to look up at the scoreboard? And he said, yeah. And he said, I saw that I was tied there. And there was Dustin Johnson, number one in the world, and all the top players in the world. And I was tied with them. And he said, I could have said to myself, oh my God, those guys, like, I mean, seriously, I'm so lucky to be with those guys. But he said, instead, I said to myself, why not me? Why not me? Why can't I win these next three holes? Why not? I have just as good an opportunity as every one of those guys. And it was that belief in himself, not braggart, not anything else, but the reality of recognizing that he was as good on any given day as any of those people. They were all fallible. They were all great, but they were all fallible. And he went on to win the PGA, and now he's gone on to win something else. It is a confidence, but it's a knowledge of yourself. So what do I want to leave you with? What I want to leave you with is, are you doing the job that you expected to do where you're working? Are you doing what is going to make you the most productive? And if you're out there in interview land and you're interviewing for jobs, make sure that they understand what you're good at. And make sure that when you look at that job, it dovetails seamlessly to the things you're good at. Don't jump for the bait. Don't get suckered. Do your own due diligence. You are responsible for your own happiness and for your own success. Nobody else, not an organization, not another human being. It is your responsibility. So take it. And if you're not vaccinated, one last time, get vaccinated. I'm Jim Bakei. Podcast is Be You. The world will adjust. Thanks, everybody.